This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming production or Deborah Harkness. All views expressed are solely our own.
It begins with absence and desire. It begins with blood and fear. It begins with the discovery of witches.
Welcome to episode 35 of the All Souls podcast. We are so happy to be back, and we are weekly for season two. By the way, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and this is the All Souls podcast, where the magic is as real as our CGI budget allows.
Correct. So we are here to discuss episode one of season two, or episode 201 of A Discovery of Witches. Are we ready, my Freddies, Summer? Dive into it, because we got a lot. So for us, it was a short recap, so the end of or a little bit over about season one, but it was definitely toward the end of season one, and that it ended with them time-walking in period clothing, and then it went seamlessly into 201, with Peter Knox and co. at the Bishop House looking for clues and, well, Diana.
In their room.
In their bedroom.
In their room.
Yes.
And Creeper Jer-Bear is like...
He's like, I'm good.
They were wearing these clothes recently. They just took these off. Can we discuss the fact that they somehow magically know that she's a time walker instantaneously? They're way smarter in the show.
Correct.
On TV.
That's true. Jer-Bear says, their clothes are here. What's up? And Satu says, she's a time walker. So Jer-Bear's like, well, wait. I can wait. I'm good at waiting. And she can't be gone forever. So that's a creeper.
It was such a weird leap for me for them to just automatically think she's a time walker, because witches have been getting less and less powerful over the centuries. So there aren't any powerful witches in this time like that. So I don't think they know that Stephen Proctor was a time walker. And if they don't know that her dad was a time walker, why would they even know that time walkers still exist?
So London, 1590, All Hallows Night. And we open with a bonfire and this backlit, from our perspective, backlit image of three women sitting in front of this bonfire. And it, before we even get a look of them, did you think a little bit Shakespeare-y?
I thought that was Sarah's hair. I thought I saw Sarah's hair at first. I was like, why is Sarah there?
You're funny.
It was a beautiful black actress that from the back looked like she had Sarah's hair. So I was just like, wait a minute, where are we? And I was like, no, they just said 1590. So it has to be in the past. So it can't be Sarah. But at the same time, I was like.
So the witch in the middle was Goody Alsop. And she portends that the witch they've been waiting for will arrive that night.
Do you know what? I want to take a minute and talk about Goody Alsop. When they first showed her at the bonfire with her hair down in that gorgeous little flower crown, right? She's sitting there. She looked decades younger than the Goody Alsop. Hair down and everything. That whole outfit and the whole giving into that, the bohemian witchy side, right? So being just totally in it and not hiding felt like it made her more youthful and more alive. And then when they showed her later constrained in the period clothing of the time, she looked older and more frail and more fragile.
Not on purpose. Comparing the hippiness, bohemianness, whatever, of the 21st century witches, the bishop witches, or the Mather and bishop witches community, to the 16th century London witch community. So you're trying to say that they come by it honestly?
They come by it honestly, but I'm also saying that when she hides, she looks feeble and older. And when she is relishing in her witchiness and they are out at the bonfire for All Souls Night, right? She looks youthful and powerful. So I think when she's, I feel like, and maybe this is just how I took it, but I feel like when she's clothed in the garb of the accepted look for that time period, she hides as an older woman who has no reason to look at her. Like, you wouldn't give her a second look. But she was, like, flipping gorgeous in that bonfire light with the hair down and her flower crown. I'm just saying. She looked... When they showed her again later, I was like, wait, is that the same person? Because it was clearly Goody Allsup in the beginning, because she's like, the foretold witch, this is the night she's coming. This is the night we've all... I believe this is the night. This is the All Souls' night when this fabled witch will appear. And she, you know, when they showed her up later, I was like, wait, is that the same lady? She looks so frail. I'm sure it was on purpose, but when she is not hiding, she looks powerful, strong, and just gorgeous.
So Matthew and Diana time walk / land in an alley somewhere. And she's like, where the fuck are we?
Yeah. And he let her arrive.
Naked.
He let her look better than that. Better than that. He let her time travel in a shift. Basically naked. It's naked for the time, right? Basically naked. And he's at least got pants on. And I know that in the book, they arrived in their house. Right? They arrived in his house someplace. It was inside of a domicile, not in an alley. So she's not only 60 miles away from where she intended to land them, but she was also in full sight of all her new neighbors.
Exactly. And Matthew says to her, asking, where the fuck are we? Is not where I'd hoped. Oopsie. So as they rush down the alley, the gorgeous music of Rob Lane's, those champagne glasses are burr, 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 which, of course, I cannot make that sound, comes up.
I feel like they put a lot of trust in Diana's first real time walk. Because, I mean, she went a few moments back and different location at in New York. But they put a lot of faith in her time-walking ability to arrive in night clothes. What if it had been broad daylight? That alley would have been full of people.
What if she jumped into the bonfire? She would have died.
That's also my point. That a lot of faith put into this. I'm just saying I would have dressed a little bit differently, knowing, as they know now, that they literally could land anywhere.
So the... as the music comes up, Matthew, like, legit, he just walks straight into a house, just opens the door. And as they enter, the four-note theme plays. It was very unexpected.
That was weird for me because I was like, wait, does he know where he is? Because he's like, where are we? And then he goes in the house and I was like, wait, does he know this house? Or did he just literally open a doorway into a house he doesn't have any right being inside of? Which, you know, if you do that in some places in the United States today, ends up with a gun in your face.
And right as they go in, you hear the da 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 da. So the theme music starts. Da, 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 da. So does he know this place? That's what Summer's saying. Why, yes. He says, oh, yes, and takes her hand. Very well. And leads her on. And then the rest of the theme music plays us into the opening sequence, which we didn't have before. So once and only once, we'll check it. But I'm hoping they don't pull an Outlander and change it up each time. But good Lord, they might. Summer, you're going to have to. That's on you. I'm not doing this again. I'll talk about it. But I don't know that I'm going to take this detailed notes again. So hopefully once and only once, this is what I'm going to call the Pyrex opening.
The Pyrex? Are you talking about the opening credit sequence?
It's a change.
Because he's not doing the voiceover anymore.
Correct.
Even though he didn't do it every episode last season. But they actually, here's the thing. They also actually had footage that didn't give away stuff that they could use from last season for this season. I think that last season, because, you know, you didn't really want to give any visuals away. And this, what I liked about how they did this credit sequence is that they kind of integrated stuff we've seen with stuff we haven't seen, which some of it is recognizable, like, ooh, we know what that is. And some of it's just like, that could be just a Thursday. So
a Thursday.
Exactly. It's nice. It was a nice amalgam of imagery for the intro, but it's still the same music. So that was nice. I was glad that stayed the same at least.
I liked what they did with the whole science thing, and they had the blood and they had the Pyrex. The first thing we see is like a camera over the opening of an Erlenmeyer flask, or I guess a graduated cylinder, I should say, which has those little hash marks on it that says, you know, how much volume you have of some liquid. And if you look at the opening where you can see the hash marks, you can tell you're looking into a flask. There's a little word that says Pyrex. So we know who made the flask. So that's why I'm calling it the Pyrex opening. But yeah, so I love how it goes from like hard science, so Pyrex, chemistry, that kind of thing, to Diana in a dress we know, Summer and I know, but we're not going to spoil. And it is her most beautiful dress of the season, by the way. And then we get the three-quarter profile of Matthew against the backdrop of a church. And the rose window is like, serves as the background, serves as his fancy collar or ruff to mirror Diana's that we had just seen. Then we get a clip of Venice, home to the congregation, Matthew again in profile, overlaid with a clock. So time, anyone? Symbolic of him, that he lived such a long life, and of course the fact that they both time walked. And also Diana in a rowboat in Oxford is the minute hand of that clock. And then we get blood being like dripped into this little sample thing.
You went so deep on this. I was not.
I didn't go deep. I just went. I told you I'm going to do it once and that's it.
I know. I'm just telling you that I have now seen that opening like probably four or five times. And I, while I'm recognizing the things you're mentioning, I did not notice any of this when I was watching it any of those times.
I promise you, the only reason is that I watched it a few times and I also paused the poop out of it. So that's the only way. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gotten this. So I put blood and science and then more travel. And then we see two hands over each other where I'm probably supposed to guess that it's Matthew and Diana. And then more travel. Looks like maybe Prague, but we don't know where yet. Then someone is throwing something. They look angry about something. And we only see it kind of in profile, but all the features are taken away. We just see like the outline of someone moving. And then we see fancy hands, Diana trying to be all weavery. And in front of a backdrop of the Pyrex.
Did you just say fancy hands?
Yes.
What show were you watching?
This intro, I promise you, it's there.
And then I saw spirit fingers. And then I saw jazz hands.
And then a bloody hand with a knife and another hand removing the knife. Something like that, it looked like. And then we see angry Matthew. And then we see a microscope. And then we see the two of them in period clothing in a London street with wider background of what looks like castles. So maybe like a medieval city. And then we see folded hands over Goody Alsop's plant-crowned head. And by that, when I say over, or it's on the background of it. So we see folded hands over a backdrop of Goody Alsop's head with that plant crown. And then they kiss, Matthew and Diana, in profile, with the background overlay now is a tree. It's a freaking tree. Like all these, dead, or at least just branches of a tree. No, like, Yes.
It's the tree we didn't actually get in season one. Come on.
Yes. So I immediately thought of Book of Life here, which is book three in the series, in case you haven't read it. But since it was both of them and not just her, I'm not sure. I'm not 100% it was an allusion to that. But I mean, it's a tree. It's kind of almost over the head too, for readers. And then we see Diana with Witchwater, the gorgeous shot from above. And that's her opening. I promise that's only going to happen once. I'm not doing it again. So they've gone into the house. We're back with our people in 1590. Apparently, this house is never empty. Almost as soon as they enter, someone brusquely demands, "Who the hell are you?" And Matthew, super vampire, speeds over to Diana, growling, "We have the growl people," telling this dork face to stand down. She's with me. Oops. It's not a dork face. It's the amazingly gorgeous Kit, a.k.a. Christopher Marlowe.
A.K.A. that guy who was on the Victoria show on the BBC who played.
Yes.
And you know what? And he was also in a movie I just watched last night called, and I've seen it before, so it's old, About Time. Have you seen this, Ginger? Please go watch it immediately. It's amazing. It has him in a side character. It's got Domhall something. He's the redhead. You'll recognize him. And then Bill Nye, or however you pronounce his last name. No, not that guy. N-I-G-H-Y.
Oh, the dude from Love Actually.
Nye, the guy who plays Billy Mack from Love Actually, right? He plays the dad and Rachel McAdams. It's an adorable movie. You'll love it. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. But the prince, sorry, not the prince. He's not the prince in this. Kit, the guy who plays the Kit in this is in it. Yes, Tom, whatever his name is.
So Marlowe, evidently one of Matthew's longtime friends from this period. And right away, we know something about him. He can sense she's a witch, like he says, with a witch. But how is this possible? Well, more people come downstairs. And I wrote, the family is back together.
In this moment, in just this moment, only this moment, I felt bad for Kit. Just this moment. Because if my best friend, or who I envision as my best friend, showed up unexpected, who's supposed to be hundreds of miles away. If he's so far away and he shows up in the company of someone who's a witch, right? Who he patently hates, and he has made a career of hating witches, and he literally left England to go to Scotland to persecute witches, and he shows up with a witch in tow. What would you expect your friend to do? That is exactly what I would expect all of my friends to do. You've clearly been bewitched. However, this is the only scene to which I extend that olive branch to. Any scene after this, we're done.
So all these people are calling him Master Royden and saying they hadn't expected him for weeks. Like, what the hell are you doing? Forget the witch. What are you doing here? So what's going on, yo? Kit goes to the noobs, the other people who came downstairs, and says, she's a witch. And Matthew tells him, enough, dude, leave it. Matthew sharply tells Kit, I am well in my right mind, because he knows exactly where.
No, he said perfectly. I am perfectly in my right mind. And that is exactly what somebody who has been bewitched would absolutely say.
I was thinking about Kit. It would make sense. And this is what you were saying, I think, that it would make sense that Kit would think that he was bewitched.
Yeah.
Basically, Matt's all, stop with the hot messes. This is Diana. You will speak of her with respect. She is the lady of the house, dot, dot, dot. A little beat there. My wife. So two faces, Diana's and Kit's. Diana looks at him like, huh? And Kit's like, the fuck? When he says wife. So
seriously,
that was fun.
which is probably even more of a reason for him to think his friend has been bewitched. Because who leaves 2 weeks ago or weeks ago, however long he's been gone, and shows up unannounced with a quote unquote witch wife? Not quote unquote, an actual witch wife, a wife who's a witch.
So what happened? Matthew says, meaning what happened to them arriving here now? Matthew, it's just between Matthew and Diana. Matthew says that they should have arrived in the country 60 miles away. Diana is a little bit bummed that she got it wrong. So I thought this was funny. First, Miss Witch spends the entire first almost season denying her powers for everything. And now she time walks for her almost first real time. And she's butthurt about being 60 miles off. Of course, but getting the day and the place otherwise. Exactly right. Sheesh, woman.
But just wait. Just wait. She can't light a candle like in
oh,
15 minutes.
Which,
so,
I know, I in mean, 15
she
minutes.
She went from I just traveled like, you know, 400 years in the past, however many years in the past. And I can't light a candle because
right?
I can't, because she doesn't find out now. She finds out later. Why? But, you know. It's a very silly paradox to be living in.
Matthew says, he's all, you did it, girl. Like, you got us here. You did it. And she corrects him with like a smile going, your wife did it. And that he's like, yeah,
that
sorry
was
about
funny.
Sorry about that. She finishes his sentence regarding Kit. She says he can be protective and suspicious. So she is actually reaching out that olive branch that Summer is as well this one time.
To be fair, though, she keeps trying. She gives him, and I think it has to do with the fact that he's a historical figure that she is familiar with and has information about, but she gives him way more leeway than he deserves. This night alone, everyone gets a pass because it's weird. It's weird what happened and how they showed up and all the things. All those things are weird. They get a one night pass.
Yeah, correct. And then we find out. Now, you may have had a hunch, but we didn't know for show until now. She tells the audience when she's telling Matthew, Kit's a demon. A demon? No, a demon. an extra D because he's that demony. What? Matthew is worried.
Demons don't have two D's.
I know,
demons,
right?
Demons don't have two D's, Ginger. You be
it's
careful.
It's just demon. I know. Matthew is worried. He sees her. She's still half naked in her shift. He sees her and he can see her neck and he's like, they will know that I fed on you and they will not understand.
Can we talk about that? He keeps saying, keep this covered up. And then she spends the rest of this episode and every episode that I've seen, which is not many, clearly, but at least the rest of this episode with her hair in an updo that completely exposes her neck, which I found weird.
I would have to go see again where exactly he fed. If it was on her neck, then yeah. But if it was like on her kind of collarbone area, no, it might have.
It's her neck. It's her neck and it's the back of her neck. The back of her neck on her, I believe, her left-hand side. And that being said, is that he keeps saying, keep it covered up. And then she spends every other outfit and hairdo in an updo. So you clearly didn't take him seriously. Or you weren't paying attention to how Francoise did your hair. And BT Dubs, I love Francoise.
Me too. We learn a new word, wech. And that's the word of the time for a vamp. And a witch living with a wech is not normal. And he keeps telling her, he tells her, oh, this is what Summer said, Summer's meaning, keep your vampire hickey covered up always.
Uh-huh.
So not quite a hickey if they, I guess it hide your hickey. So the housekeeper, Francoise, lets them know that some of his human friends have been sent for. Because he had asked for them to go find so-and-so and so-and-so. It was Earl of Northumberland, which is Henry Percy, and Sir Walter Raleigh. Now, they're trustworthy. He trusts him with his life. They're part of the School of Night, which we'll hear a tiny, very little bit about in just a moment. And he asks Francoise, the housekeeper, to go get one of Louise's old dresses, some clothing for Diana to wear, because she's half naked.
And by old, it's 20 years ago. So it's not even close. Like, I didn't realize how old was going to be. Until he refuses to be seen in public with her in one of Louise's gowns, which I thought was funny.
So, yeah. So if Louisa visits every once in a while, I guess for a vampire, 20 years is like a week, right? Like, who cares?
It's negligible. But I had a thought when Diana realizes this is the School of Night. You're Matthew Royden, the one we know nothing about. And this is not going to be where you think I'm going to go with this, so just bear with me. It made me think that maybe we as a society in America, instead of calling it night school, should have called it the School of Night, because it sounds so much cooler. Think of how many more people would go to night school if they called it the School of Night. Like, because it's the same thing. They are all meeting in the dark, right? Right. But if they'd called it Welcome to Night School, none of those famous people would have shown up at all.
So Diana clues in on him being the Matthew Royden from the School of Night. And he's not so happy to have to become him again. There's something that we don't know. It'll be a bit before we know anything. But the Matthew of this time is very different from the Matthew that we meet in Diana's time. And Matthew, now I'm giving him F's. Matthew wanted to arrive, lay low, get what they needed, and then go back. Like, that's cute, Matthew. That's really cute. No. It was never going to happen. And he's like, I'm sorry. I got to go.
It's a nice try when that's your intention. When you show up in a heavily peopled area of London and you stay in your house where your friends hang out, clearly when you're not there, which is also a little bit weird that Kit just kind of has the full run of his house when he's not there. If you show up in a place where other people hang out when you're not supposed to be there, they're going to be there. Like, if I gave the homeless dude on the corner a key to my apartment and I'm like, hey, I'm out of town this weekend, enjoy. And then I showed up mid-weekend, they'd be like, what are you doing here? You said you were gone for the weekend. Why are you here now? And who's this witch you brought with you?
So Matthew has to go deal with Kit. So the next time we see him in a really nice getup. He looks really nice. And as I said, he's going to see Kit, whom he starts to interrogate. But Kit does not want to hear it. Kit is like not having it. He slaps him. He's pissed off. Matthew expects him to, expects Kit to believe him, but he sees him as a stranger, which of course we understand, and Matthew should understand, but it's hard when you have that immediate, you know. And Matthew is 400 years removed. Kit is not. Kit is of now, of that time.
So knowing what we know of Kit, do you feel like him punching Matthew, which is what he did, was his equivalent of the true love's kiss in a fairy tale? Hoping that was going to knock him out of it?
I don't think so.
Because, I mean, he clearly thought, he was upset, but like punching a dude, did he expect that to change anything? Because being upset and hitting somebody isn't going to make them happy. It's not going to make them be like, oh, I'm so sorry. You're so right. I should never have been anywhere with this woman that I brought with me in her nightgown. No big deal.
Diana gets gussied up, finally. She asks, so does Louisa visit often? But Francoise says, you need to get naked so I can get you dressed. And so while naked, she sees Diana's tattoos. I mean, scars. Oh, shoot. We forgot about those. Francoise says, I'm going to work on something new for you. Don't worry about it. And Diana looks radiant when she's put in whatever she's put in. Matthew introduces her in her clothing to Lord Henry Percy, Earl of Northumberland, and Sir Walter Raleigh. And she is gagging for this. She is losing her chaisal. And now people start to ask about her suspect accent. She's all, I'm from Cambridge, or to the west of Cambridge, she quickly trenches it with.
You're not wrong. I just want to take a second and give a shout out to the casting director of A Discovery of Witches for hiring a deaf actor to play Henry Percy. I did a search on it because I was like, that guy has a really amazing deaf accent, as awful as that sounds. I have been parts of different deaf communities over my life, and his pronunciation of words was like dead on. So I was like, I'm going to be offended if he's not, and he spent this much time studying it. But then when he wasn't, I was like, kudos for hiring the right person for the job, because he is an amazing actor.
Agreed. When I found that out, I was like, oh, that's amazing.
Adam Sklar. He says he is a profoundly deaf actor, which I, like I said, I love the inclusivity. I love the inclusivity of the casting. But what he was saying is that it was so difficult for him, being a profoundly deaf actor, to play someone who is only moderately hard of hearing. So I thought that even shows even more how amazing of an actor he is. So
because it means he had to. Pardon the word, but that's the most important part of acting is listening, right? And so that is that. So pardon the word. Obviously, he can't physically listen maybe as much as you or I could, but he was listening with his eyes, listening to whatever extent he could with his ears, right? He was listening with his body because, yeah, if he really is that, if he's profoundly deaf, right, and he cannot hear much, if much, then he is going to be relying on all kinds of cues that are not aural. And so I'm sure in their blocking of that scene, knowing, because they all would have known this, right? They would have definitely set them up in a place where everyone's facing each other. So he can read lips, right? No one's back is to him. And they would have absolutely set him up for success. So I think that was a good call on the casting and an excellent way to be inclusive. And not just inclusive, and this is going to sound maybe funky monk for me, but not just inclusive for inclusivity's sake. This was a legit person from history who was somewhat deaf. They could have had a hearing actor do their best.
You know, they absolutely could. And that makes me think of, there was a show on, it's not ABC Family anymore, now it's Freeform. And I don't remember what it was called, but one of the actresses was a quote unquote, played a deaf person. And I get, her name is something Leclerc. Her last name is Leclerc. And I get so mad every time I think back to enjoying that show, because she's not significantly deaf. Like, I believe she has a slight hearing issue, but she speaks normally, and she, in the show, did a deaf accent, and it pissed me off every time I watched it once I found out that it ruined it for me. So I was so happy to go back and see and go read when I saw that they had the character and him saying he was hard of hearing and everything else to know that he was an actual hard of hearing actor and not somebody who is putting on a voice, which is how it felt to me once I found out. Before I knew, I enjoyed the show a lot. And then once I knew, it ruined it for me.
So to get down to breasts.
We're talking breasts now? I don't remember that scene.
No. I was trying to say brass tacks, but it came out breast. Breast tacks. Brass.
Can we?
This is a great episode, Ginger, by the way.
I am all about your breasts, Ginger. Please tell me about them.
Not mine.
It's been a while. I haven't
not
seen
mine,
them.
Doodle.
It's been a while. They were different
wow.
then.
Let is not. I'm going to bleep the bleep out of this. I'm going to stop. So. Okay. Brass tacks. Matthew tells everyone that Diana is in need of a teacher. She's a witch. She's an orphan. She needs training.
A discreet one.
Okay. But she still needs a teacher.
I know. But it was, it's so funny because it's not just like a teacher. We need a discreet teacher. Somebody who's not going to talk. But to be fair, in this time period with everything going on in Scotland, as they keep telling us over and over and over again, no one is undiscreet about being a witch. Sophie's ancestor is super pissed every time they keep dragging her back to their house.
So Diana jumps in and she's like, we also, which he forgot to mention, need to locate a lost book. It's an alchemical manuscript. Then Matthew jumps in and he does not look so pleased. He looks at her and sums it up. The book contains info about creatures, origins, blah, blah, blah. And Diana and Kit have a mild sparring.
Of the Book of Mystery, you mean?
Yeah. Yes. They tell Diana that her presence and accent would make her stick out. It's safer if she stays in.
They're not wrong.
And she's like, for a little while.
Can we be honest, though? Her accent, other than the fact that it sounds American, she's not doing... that's it. That's her accent. In the book, she kind of adopts the Elizabethan cadence and accent after a time. But she's not even doing that. And I mean, they aren't speaking in a way that sounds any different than modern British either.
So she's like, okay, I'll stay in for a while, but no one's going to force me. And Matthew then says that he has to leave to reconnect with his peeps. He needs to refamiliarize himself with them.
Is this before or after she goes, is it too early for bed? I might sleep for a month. When I imagined the severe jet lag she must be going through. I have traveled forward in time 9 hours at most. And during those 9 hours, I arrive 9 hours later, a wreck that needs to sleep, who pushes through. Because our friend Mandy told us, push through. Push through till bedtime. But it's dark there, so I feel like she could probably go to sleep anyway.
So then the next scene we see is streets of London. Matthew is out in a hooded cape. Diana's having dreams, yo.
Can we talk about how they wear capes in Elizabethan time?
I love those capes. We need to bring capes
too,
back.
But they don't serve any purpose except fashion. Because if they were really cold, they would cover their arms. And because they always have one out, it's like me sleeping under a duvet. I've always got a limb poking out to be a personal thermostat. So it's not an effective warmth thing. It is 100% fashion. And it's a weird fashion. Because why would you create a fashion that doesn't actually serve a purpose other than fashion?
Well, if you're rich, it doesn't matter. But lower classes or middle classes, only even middle classes with some kind of money, maybe. But yeah, if you're poor or in the lower class, first of all, you probably didn't own a cloak. But if you had a cloak, it must have served a purpose rather than be...
Its purpose was warming one of your arms, not two.
So she is waking up so rudely from her dreams, and she goes downstairs to look through the window, and she sees a cloaked figure walking in the street with a bit of a halo, halo.
Which is glam. It's a glam.
But it still looks like a halo.
Okay, Beyonce.
I didn't say it wasn't a glam. I'm so not Beyonce.
Uh-huh.
I'm just
I see what you're doing.
It's funny.
Okay, Beyonce.
I was singing part of her song, but that doesn't make me Beyonce. Come on now. Don't be goose. Like, there's like some glow around her, like upper torso head area.
It's a glam, which is unfortunate because I believe that Diana should have been also had her own glam, which is something that identifies her to other witches.
Yes. So, of course, she follows. So she was really not smart. So she puts a cloak on, quote unquote, gets dressed. That's how she gets dressed. And she... goes outside, follows this person with the glam, and she finds, as she turns her around, she gets to her, and the person turns around, and it's Sophie, except with moles and thicker eyebrows.
Did you just say moles?
Yes.
And thicker eyebrows?
Yes.
That was way deeper of a description than I anticipated. Because the first time I saw her, I didn't even understand that it was actually the same actress. But I also believe now that the UK is real fond of reusing their actors to save money, because both of the two series that we spend a lot of time podcasting about both use the same actor to play ancestors of the current year's actors. With Randall, they use the same actor to play those two. And in this series, they have the same. Like, I feel like that's lazy casting. I know it saves money and I'm not mad about that, but it feels lazy to me.
It is brilliant to me because we got more Tobias.
Sure, in Outlander, but not here. What I'm saying is they could have taken time to find an actor who gave the impression of looking like that actor without being the same freaking actor. It feels lazy for me. But that's just me. I'm not mad at it. I accustomed myself to it pretty quickly once I figured out what they'd done. But it feels lazy.
Following her. And she tells Matthew later on what she saw. And she's like, and she connects this person that she saw with Sophie. And she's like, oh, that's how the chess piece gets to them. This is her ancestor. Diana says she feels new powers. She sensed her. She's feeling something. And they fight because he's mad he wasn't there to protect her. And she's pissed. He thinks he needs to protect her. So notice the theme with Matthew, right? Since they've arrived in 1590, he's growled. And he's turned a lot more perspective. That too. Protective. And he started yelling more. And not just yelling in general. He's yelling at her.
She also completely reneged on her agreement.
I'm not saying that she didn't have a part of that.
She was like, I won't go anywhere. I'll stay here.
And she goes out in the middle of the night, which is the best time. So he will not tell her whom he met, but he expects her to tell all. Diana straightens him up. Look, you don't protect me. We protect each other. And she says, we shouldn't run scared. And he says very overbearingly and very strongly, quote, I never run scared of anything in my life. Whoa, now slow your roll, Nellie.
I mean, that's not true. That's not true. He ran to Scotland to escape her when he first met her and hung out with Hamish. He 100% ran scared just then.
I don't know if he was scared of her. He may have been scared. Well, he said anything, so it didn't matter what he was scared of.
He was clearly scared of himself. That's what I'm saying. He was scared of what he would do and what it meant to him. That's still scared, and that's still running.
He may not. It is, but he may not consider him being afraid of what he may do to be being afraid of anything, because it's within him. Who knows?
Well, that's.
But
that's a dude thing.
She's all, I don't care. If you don't help me, I'll find my teacher myself. So the next day, probably some morning, maybe later, they're in bed. Matthew will put Walter Raleigh on the case of finding a witch teacher. Discreet. And he takes her around the town. He says, only in new clothes, until she gets new clothes. So I love the dressing scene. It was very Outlander reminiscent, right? Each layer, piece, and, you know, in front of, in a bedroom. And I think there was a fire going too. It was just like, I mean, different time period, of course. But it just reminded me of all the layers when we got Mrs. Fitz with Claire.
Every time they show her getting dressed in period clothing, it reminds me of every old timey photo
we posted.
Because all of those clothes... All of those clothes get tied in the back and aren't attached to anything, but from the front, it looks like legit. But once you cover all the tie strings in the back, it just looks like a cool outfit. But it just made me think of all of those fake outfits we wore over the years.
So I love the music here too. And the natural makeup, and I know she had makeup on, but the natural look they gave her and the lighting is just, they did such a beautiful job. They did last semester. They did last semester, too. They did last
what?
Season, too.
You're bad.
Her hair is to die for.
But it's also pulled away from her neck wounds that have healed. But can we talk about, did you notice her buttons on her outfit when they first went out?
No.
They reminded me of two things. One, they reminded me kind of the peacock feather. You know, at the top of the peacock feather, how they have that.
The eye.
That kind of, yeah. But that also made me think of the Romani evil eye. And she had two buttons on her dress that looked like they were wards, warding off the evil eye. I'm not saying that's what they were and that was the intention. But if you go back and watch this episode, look at those buttons again. And they remind me of that evil eye without the hand. Just the eye without the hand.
I have to go back and watch that or look at that because that does sound.
Do
that,
it.
That sounds really pretty.
Do it because it took me 4 watchings to see it.
And Matthew in his outfit, all of them actually, all of them, looks scrumdiddlyumptious. Thank you, Wonka. Wowza.
I mean, it's the same outfit he wears the entire episode. Like, he literally wears the same outfit every time he leaves. It is the same pants. And it's delicious every time. But that just means he has 7 pairs of black leather pants, 7 black doublets, 7 white undershirts. And, you know, the earring he gets at a later episode. But other than that, it's the same outfit every time he goes anywhere.
But he started to grow out his beard and it looks nice, too.
Does it? Because it looks like a man who's having a hard time growing a beard.
He just started it. Let's give him some grace. And they're off. Streetwalkers, they. The music is so good. I can't sing it. I could sing it. I just can't remember what it exactly sounded like. But as I was listening to it, it brought me a tear prick. It's upbeat. It's rhythm. And yes, the way it sounded, like its tune or whatever, was reminiscent of a journey and moving along, like moving along at a steady clip. Now, Matthew does not recall, after Diana asks him, he's like, I don't remember. He doesn't recall if he always got this much attention walking around. And the art department, oh my goodness, did such a gorgeous job. So they give us all kinds of overviews, all kinds of bird's eye shots and pictures or, you know, images that they concocted of 1590s London. When Diana sees old St. Paul's Cathedral, seeing it through Diana's eyes is so good. Like, this to me was one of the highlights of the episode, in daylight, seeing all the work that Peter North and all of the team with the set designer, everyone, whether it's digital or the workers or the designer, everything. It was so beautiful. And seeing it through Diana's eyes to me was even better than me just looking at it. Teresa brought that so well.
For me, what this did for me was just kind of solidify how appropriate it was that when any fire broke out in London at this time period, that everyone's house was on fire because everything was made of wood and they had literally like 6 feet between houses. Like, that is not a norm in most places anymore. In the United States, that is not a norm, except for in the big cities that have all the connected buildings. So if you live in a suburb or a smaller town, you're used to everyone having more space. But imagining that so many people in this time period were all congregated in this town and this close together, it's honestly terrifying. For me, because of fire seasons in Northern California and everything else that's been happening over the last however many years. And it's just, when I was seeing these houses and how close the alleyways were, I was feeling super claustrophobic about the whole endeavor.
It definitely is. They were walking around and they spent so much time walking in. See, there were alleys, but even the regular quote unquote roads, streets were very narrow.
I couldn't tell the difference. If that was a road, it could have been an alley or a road or a walkway. Who can say? We were not. And this is the thing. The only thing they showed outside of the close-ups of the closes or alleyways or whatever you call them was the larger overview shots with what I'm assuming is the Thames running through London. And so the waterway and then the two sides of London being separated by the water. But other than that, all we saw was those closes, like the very close claustrophobic alleyways and walkways that they walk through. And that was insane because I can't imagine anyone feeling as clearly as a 21st century person, that doesn't look safe to me at all. At all. Just knowing how wooden everything is.
There's a sketch dude. Matthew sees a dude who's kind of sketch. And this sketch dude, we see him going to report to someone whom we haven't met yet. But we do hear that he reports about Matthew. And he says, all we hear is he's changed his appearance, but it's definitely him. So we'll have to find out more about that later. But Matthew sees it. Matthew notices someone observing them and then walking away. So Matthew is annoyed at himself for being careless. And careless about what? Well, not just being out and about, but allowing himself to be seen before he's had a chance or made the opportunity to go check in with the Queen's dude. And he's kind of like he's kind of a semi-boss, right? He has to check. He's the queen is the ultimate boss, but he has to go check in with the queen's like underling or high person, but under the queen. So there's that. But also he says, and I don't think it's about Lord Burley. It's about something else. He says he's a no one, an associate of Kit's. So that may be referring to.
I feel like that's mostly him saying, you probably, as a historian, Diana, have never heard of this dude because he was smaller potatoes. Maybe, but clearly he didn't rate him high enough to put him on her radar. Sorry.
So Matthew, he goes off. He's off. He's like, I got to do this. And he's out at a tavern. Now he goes to a guy to get him drunk, pretty much. And he asks him what he was doing a week ago. He asked the dude what he, Royden, was doing a week ago. And the dude's like, this is a test. Oh my gosh, what's going on? And he helps up. And I believe he calls the dude William. I could be wrong. But he wants to know what the word has been. So like, what have you heard about where I have been? What am I supposedly up to? And the dude talks. He says, you're in Scotland. The word is you're in Scotland with the Scottish king, keeping him focused on his own affairs. And not those down south, the king. Matthew then goes to visit a dude, and this dude is Burley, the queen's main dude. He was supposed to have, according to Burley, actually Matthew knows this, Matthew was supposed to stay in Scotland until either he finished at whatever that meant or was called back. And here he is without permission back in London town, and he hadn't paid his respects. Like he hadn't sent word. He just, oops, shows up. And Lord Burley, Matthew's all, I had to leave, else I'd be detected. Burley doesn't really have an answer to that. And so for now, he gets a pass. For now. But Burley's like, okay, but you got to work for me. And you can't, when you do leave, and if you think you're going to leave again, you cannot leave without my permission. So don't forget this. So he's like, okay, I got it.
He's like, cool, cool, cool. But when I go, you can eat a d- because you won't notice because my other person's going to show up and be me.
So it is then later next scene, nighttime. Looking for Matthew, Diana walks into his office. She finds a letter with the royal seal and she opens it and it says, my trusted shadow. Yeah, Diana's snooping.
Wait. Before that, didn't he meet with Master Pole?
Who's Master Pole?
In the pub? He's the redhead dude with the beard in the pub. I just want to point out that is Simon Meacock.
Oh!
From Outlander fame. Who was Hugh Monroe.
Oh, I did not know that. Hi, Hugh. Welcome.
You're terrible at this. And I was like, wait, you didn't mention it. How did you not notice that? Baby girl, I didn't even notice that until you'd moved on to the next scene.
I'm trying to do my job. So she snoops and she finds a letter with the royal seal and she opens it and she reads. We don't know how far she gets, but we know she reads out loud anyway. My trusted shadow. Huh. And then as she walks around a little bit later on, from the flicker of a flame, she can tell there's a secret hidey hole somewhere. So air is moving through walls, basically.
Well, that's, you make it kind of sound like it was magic. That was not magic. That was 100% like physics. And
no, the flicker of a flame because there was airflow.
Correct.
I never said anything about magic.
I know. I'm just making sure that we make this as scientific as possible where it needs be for reasons.
It's his secret Catholic dungeon.
It's not a dungeon. It's his secret Catholic attic. Like it's, and it's a twofold attic. It is one set of stairs that leads to a whole second set of stairs.
Yes. So it's a secret Catholic compartment.
There you go. I'll take that.
And listen to that music when the door opens and she starts, and then you see a little bit more, you see her entering the room. It's like the sound of something circling. Like if I cannot explain it anything better.
It sounded like a helicopter.
Yeah, but it wasn't consistent.
But only in the second chamber. The first chamber, nothing. The first place she went, I heard nothing. I heard nothing at all. But when she got into that second place, it was like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Exactly.
Like a helicopter.
Exactly. But it was slow. It wasn't whoa, whoa, whoa. It was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. But yes, that's a very good way to put it, though. Yeah, so it wasn't constant or consistent. It was consistent. It wasn't constant. But yeah, it definitely sounded like something was kind of, again, going in a circle, and like as it passed her or got close to her, made this whoo sound. And so that was definitely interesting. And then with a little of the theme, a little bit of da da da, and then we see Matthew is coming on his way home. I mean, on his way home. We don't know if he's coming on his way home. Can we please get that hat on, dudes? What'd you think about that hat? We saw it for a hot second only. Like the side tilt hat?
The sideshow hat? What are we talking about? I clearly don't remember this hat.
A side tilt hat.
Was it like a tiny top hat?
Yes.
I do a little bit recall the tiny top hat, but I'm sure that's just fashion.
That's not my question. My question is, what do you think about it?
I think it's just fashion.
So you didn't like it.
And I let it go. No, I didn't care one way or the other. I let it go. Because I've been more concerned about the one shoulder cape that leaves an entire half of his torso open to the extremities.
So let it go. If it's fashion, let it go.
Yeah, for sure. In the words of Elsa, let it go.
So Matthew's on his way home. We see him walking down the street on his way to meet when you're walking down the street on the people that you meet each day. I forget what that's from, but it's a song.
I feel like you just made this whole thing up.
No, you never heard that song? You've heard that song. We grew up with it.
Did we?
So anyway, I wrote, can we please get that hat on, dudes? But apparently Summer doesn't want that hat on, dudes. She doesn't care either way. And then we're back to Diana. She picks up a rosary and it's the opening music, the four notes. Da, 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 da. And who walks in but Françoise? She finds her and says, I hope I wasn't unwise to place my trust in you.
She's so sassy.
She is sassy. I like Françoise.
I adore her. And I'm so glad we get her in future books. Please keep reading all the books, people, because we get more Françoise.
Like, she did not think Matthew would tell his wife that he was Catholic. To her, she is his wife. So why wouldn't he tell his wife that he was Catholic? But I guess it's a big deal.
No, I disagree. Literally to everyone, she is a quote-unquote wife. To everyone, she is a quote-unquote wife. No one believes she belongs there yet. Francois being super nice and trying to be the best version of herself by accepting her into the household, but even she doesn't trust her 100%. So everyone treats her like quote-unquote his wife.
The fact that she's new, wife or not, would be reason enough not to completely trust her. And she's a witch. But if Matthew says it's his wife, they will go along with it. That's all I'm saying.
He clearly owns them in a way because of stature and anything else. Like all the things because of the de Clermont space in this whole whatever. She owes him fealty, if nothing else. But she also clearly has concerns.
Then Françoise brings on the, if you had bewitched him, dudes. Diana suspected he was a spy, but she didn't know for certain until now. And she realizes he's identifying Catholics. He's betraying his fellow Catholics. By the time Matthew gets home, she's sitting prettily at his desk. And she looks up at him and tells him he looks older. And he tells her how the meeting went.
Dude. That was a first.
Then she asks him why he gives up Catholics. And he's like, it's duty to my father. Like, did I get that right? Did I hear that right? That's what he said, right? Matthew promises, don't worry, though. We won't encounter Philippe here. And he says, Philippe needed a spy in the English court, and I'm good at my job. Or at least I was until now. And no one thought meaning Philippe and the family. No one thought about time travel, and there might be an oopsie in the plan down 400 years later, and then, but not 400 years later. Philippe knew he was Catholic when he sent Matthew to be a spy and collect other Catholics. Let's go to bed. And he says, let's go to bed. You're the only thing that makes sense here. She's all, okay. And then the music plays the four notes.
But secretly, this isn't over, my friend. This conversation will happen again until you give me the answer I need.
Oh, it's probably going to happen. It's going to continue. Yes, ma'am. So the next day, or a day, several of the spy-y people are marching Miss Sophie. Well, the people that looked, the one person I think he looked kind of sketch. So it's probably the people who work for Burley. So four of these people, oh, that can't be Burley because they wouldn't have, who knows? Four people dressed with these hats on are marching Miss Sophie Witch to Matthew. What up? Matthew straight up says, this woman is under my protection. I think she's a witch. She needs help, yo. Miss Sophie Witch says, we'll see about that. They sit down for a witch-a-witch. Sophie's like, nope, not a witch. I'm going to go.
Dude, she...
Matthew is she, not having
not
it.
Not Matthew. Matthew also didn't, but also Diana wasn't having it. She's like, no. Let me try again. You're being a... Stop being a... And just wait, because you're not doing the thing you need to do. You are trying to shirk off the duties. But to be fair, why should she? Why should she? She owes no one anything. She's only there because they literally forced her there. And even though they forced her there and then Matthew threw money at her in a pouch, that's not enough. That doesn't feel safe. If people who are stronger than me rounded me up in my neighborhood, put me in the back of a van, and drove me somewhere, and then asked me to do something, I would 100% not do it because, one, I don't believe yet that it is not to persecute the person that they have brought me there to persecute, potentially persecute. And two, I'm not outing myself. Obviously, you all clearly think I'm a witch. But if I out myself as being not a great witch,
then I have no chance. Exactly.
Exactly. So I feel like she was doing, this was self-preservation 100%.
100%. Of course it was. And so Matthew's not having it. And yeah, neither is Diana. And she's like, please test my ability. And Matthew throttles her. Matthew threatens her. And then here comes the old flame trick.
Did you just say straddled her?
No, I said throttles, and I meant to say threatens.
I thought you said straddled her, and it's like, I don't recall that scene.
Okay, that has to stay in. Oh, Lord.
I would have, if it happened, I would have been like, he straddled her.
You're going to stay, or I will straddle, or I will not straddle you. So here comes the old flame trick.
Sit on your lap.
Annabelle. Now, Kit is hella curious.
Yes.
He's like watching like, huh. And Diana can't. She can't do it. And then Diana says, let me try again. She's all fine. And then Diana closes her eyes and then woo woo. Those quinces shrivel. Yo. The dudes are all crossing themselves like, oh my gosh.
Dude, were those quinces? Because it looked like oranges. And I feel like Diana being like, give me another chance. And then literally killing all of the fruit in the room was not the move she was going for.
The thing is, Diana doesn't know what she can do or can't do, so she wasn't going for anything. Or sorry, she was going for literally anything.
But what was she doing? What do you think she was doing? Like, literally, she's like, let me try again, and I'm going to suck all of the life out of that bowl of fruit.
Exactly. So those quinces shrivel. Dudes are all crossing
was it
themselves.
Quince? I thought that was, like, legit, like, fruit. Like, not quince. It didn't look like quinces. I thought it was, like, lemons or something. Was it quince?
We'll have to look. A quince is what's from the book.
Well, quinces look like apples, and those didn't look like apples to me. They looked like a tiny grapefruit. They looked puckered like citrus.
We will have to go back and watch. But in the book, I believe it's quinces. We'll see. But whatever they are, they shrivel. And dudes are all crossing themselves, and Matthew has to stop her from taking the life force from the people in the room. Now, she may have not gotten that far, but the point is, after sucking the life or the energy, whatever it is, out of those fruit, it would have gone to the plants next and all over. And keep this in mind, dear listener. Whatever, keep in mind what she has just done. whatever it is, maybe it's life force, energy, whatever it is, Diana can suck it. Life force or...
Did you say she can suck it?
Energy.
Did you literally just say Diana can suck it?
Yes.
You're fired. You're 100% fired for saying, quote unquote, Diana can suck it.
Miss Sophie Witch is all, peace out. And Diana's all, please. Nope.
Legit,
and when Diana goes
she
out...
She should be.
Yes, she should be scared and leave. And when Diana goes out, people are afraid of her, or at least seem to want to avoid her. And she's wigged because Ms. Sophie Witch called Matthew her husband, and he hadn't introduced himself as such. And then along, as they're outside, they had gone outside once Ms. Sophie Witch had run away. And along comes Jack, a would-be pickpocket. Matthew stops him. So, of course, the next scene is they bring him inside.
Cool. This is our Fergus.
Exact. Oh, Lord. Pretty much. He doesn't have any family. Diana asks if he'd heard anything about her. Because he looks at her like, you know, he lives there, like on the streets, in the streets. And he's seen her. And he says, they reckon you're a witch. But since witches don't exist, he's not afraid. So she asks, do you know where the rumors started? And he says, uh-huh. It was in the tavern on the corner, the one called the Lamb.
You know, the one Kit hangs out at.
Exactly. So Matthew's friends are supportive. So they're at a meal. And this is what Summer and I were referring to, I believe. This is where there's the longer scene with Henry Percy and Adam Sklar. So at a meal, we hear Henry Percy speaking. And we learned recently, as Summer said, that this actor is actually deaf. And it was his first role. And he asks Walter and Percy, Matthew asks, so they have their scene. And a little bit later, Matthew asks Walter and Percy to leave. And Kit stays. He'd talked about Diana all over. Kit had. He doesn't deny it. And he says he'd do it again. Matthew vamps over to him like, yeah, nah, you won't. And it's the first we hear the name Galloglass. Kiss. Kit says he's meant to be in Scotland with Galloglass.
Enjoy it. Get ready to love it.
Kit says he's meant to be in Scotland with Galloglass, not in London with a witch he's married to. And then Matthew gets all matey again, or whatever he is. And Anna's all, look, we got to tell him. He's going to keep making trouble until something happens. And Kit is a problem. The reason, regardless of, or it makes it worse. Yes, it is related. But regardless of Kit's relationship with Matthew, regardless of what that is, the reason Kit is a problem, exacerbated by the fact that they have a friendly relationship, but the reason it's a problem is because he knows Matthew so well that he knows, and if he's not reined in, it'll be a bad effect, as he's already done mouthing off. He knows what the Matthew Royden of the 16th century was and what he was like. So for the 21st century Matthew to pop in, it's an about face. It is not the Matthew he's friends with.
He's also describing the Matthew Royden of that time period through the gaze of the Matthew de Clermont from the 21st century. So he's not only recalling how awful-ish he was at that time period, but also his memories of, I did some poopy stuff, my friend. So please don't judge me by the awful things I've done. I'm gonna have to do them again at some point. And I hope I don't have to do them while we're here. But if you can't find your book and you can't learn how to get us out of here, you're going to have to be my partner through this.
It is hard. So anyone who knew Matthew intimately was a close friend at this time that he now has to, because of circumstances, be around a lot can cause trouble, right? Because they're going to definitely notice he's different. He acts differently. He looks different, all these things. And so Dana's like, we got to tell him. We got to bring him in because he's a problem now. He's gonna be even a bigger problem. And Diana says when he hears the truth, he'll believe it. But this was gonna be Kit's only chance, right? This was like, they're gonna bring him in, they're gonna tell him, and they're gonna have to fully trust him. And Kit, like, Matthew's like, this doesn't happen again. You will not. And he says, he threatens him later on. So, okay. So Diana tries to start this. She's story time. Diana says, I'm not from your Cambridge. I'm from a future Cambridge. And he says she's a time spinner. So yeah, that's where we get that word. Cause she learned time walker, right? But he introduced that term, the 16th century term anyway, time spinner. Matthew isn't behaving the way he was from the 16th century because he's older. Literally, you know, he's 400 years older. So where is the proper Matthew?
He's also not the same dude.
Exactly. And he's, and Kit's like, so where's the Matthew? Where's the Matthew from now? And they really don't know. Their best guess is that he was displaced when they popped in. And then thus, their best guess is that when they leave, he should be back. And Matthew says, accept this or leave. But if you tell anyone any of this, I will end you. So that's them bringing in Kit into the fold. So we're a one big happy family, right? We'll have to see.
We'll have to see. I'm going to disagree right now for you. I don't see good things happening.
Matthew later on is at his desk and Francoise brings a note from one of Cecil's men. Is it another note from the Queen? No, because it has like a little seal on it. And he rows across the Thames and he kind of pulls a Diana, right? He rows to go see whomever has called him, has beckoned him. And Diana is up later looking for Matthew and she runs into Kit. Now, she didn't know if Matthew was all right or not. She didn't know because he didn't tell her.
She didn't know because she doesn't have social media and he hasn't texted her to say, Summer. I'm going XYZ. I'll be back in exactly. Like 30.
Well, he didn't leave a note. Exactly. Kit offers her wine and he warns her, your Matthew is different. He's gentler, I think. But being back here, wearing the cloak of his old self, he will change because of his work, his allies. And by the end of it, he will not be your Matthew any longer.
It feels strange because he clearly wants his Matthew back. The Matthew who is affected by the roles of the time period, right? So he clearly wants his person back. And he doesn't really have benefit to her succeeding in what she needs. He only wants them gone. Because when they're gone, he hopes to get his Matthew back, right? So, but that is a hope against hopes because none of them have encountered this before. So they could leave and then he is going to be the torchbearer for the ridiculousness that he experienced that they won't remember, right? Potentially.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Yeah.
I'm just saying, because we don't have active characters in the timelines that our current characters visit after they're gone, we don't collectively know what happens when they come back. Obviously, the people that are slated back into their spots don't experience the difference. However, what's going to happen to like the Kits and the Harry Percys and the Queen Elizabeths and everybody else that they have butterfly affected in that timeline? We don't know. Deb has not told us. She just says everything goes back to how it was. But it can't go back to how it was because they've been gone. But all the changes that were made in their absence are still changes. So, and this is a time travel statement, question, acknowledgement, any of those things. And I'm just saying that I don't think we know what happens. We just accept that it happens because nobody talks about it ever again. But what happened? Do we know? I don't think we do. But it's fascinating.
TT is the best. So Diana says, yes, I know you'd like us to go so you can have your Matthew back. And Kit's all, yeah, we don't dance like that. So she's almost implying something that he kind of gets. And he tells her, like, he makes it clear it wasn't like that. Though doesn't mean he doesn't want it to be like that. But he's trying to say it wasn't like that. But he does say he's seen him at his worst, but he doesn't elaborate. And then Diana says, yeah, you don't know me. And then Kit, this is probably Kit's, I think, one of his most important moments of maybe of the series, but definitely of the episode. He basically tells Diana her story with Matthew, how Matthew found her. But because he knows Matthew, he knows how Matthew found him. He tells her, I know how it started with you guys. He singled you out. You were uncommon. You weren't like anything else out there. And then he came to you and then blah, blah, blah. And he goes on. It was a beautiful, beautiful monologue.
I hated it. I hated it because he was equating his experience with Matthew to Diana's in a way that made her doubt herself. So personally, I hated it, but I get it and I understood it and I got exactly where they were going. But he was trying to seed.
He was trying to basically tell her, you're not special. It's going to happen to you too.
Yeah, you're not special. You're not anything new. He did this with me months ago, years ago, however long ago. And this is not anything new for him. You are just his next platter on the dinner menu.
And I wrote, but while he's telling her what happened to her, he's really telling us his own story, right? And then we get the theme. Their theme plays.
Of course you notice that. You turd.
Of course. And then he says, when the theme plays, when he says the words about how Matthew found her and she was uncommon and he singled her out, that she was, quote, exceptional in a way he could not define, unquote. I'm not jumping too soon. I think people, if you're a book reader, then I'm not spoiling anything and I'm not trying to spoil, but I think we can get from the passion that the passionate way he reacted to Matthew showing up with Diana, right? Whoever it was, whatever it was, he would have reacted in some way. Similarly, what he just said was Kit's and Matthew's story, as far as Matthew finding him, right? It was his own story. And it was Kit's love story, really. And he says, is someone he had not seen anything exceptional in a way he could not define until he met you. And when he says till he met you, the music changes to darker. It gets darker. And he says, and this is actually pretty, he's right. He is not wrong here. He says to Diana, you don't know him. And he's not wrong, right? Or at the very least, she does not know 16th century Matthew.
That's also not wrong, but she has also not known Matthew as long as he has. So every time I think about it, I'm like, imagine being the new girlfriend who is being approached by all of your current boyfriend's friends who are like, girl, this ain't gonna be good for you. Maybe you need to think about finding somebody else because we know him more than you do, but differently. Like, I can see how they think they are providing a service, but they don't. And especially at this point, they don't realize that this is not their Matthew de Clermont. This is not the Matthew de Clermont from the 1590s. This is the Matthew de Clermont from the 20 whatevers, the 21st century, who has gone through another 400 to 500 years of living that they don't get to experience because they're all not going to make it. For sure. So they don't understand that. And even if they did make it, they're not going to make it right now. And they don't have the current memories that Matthew has because, you know, they don't have time walkers on staff. But I feel like they are, again, I feel like Kit is trying to help her, but also serving himself in a way that serves no one. Because he doesn't have all the, at this point, he does not have all the information. Because they're not giving it to him. And given what Kit knows right now, what he knows and understands, which is not obviously the truth, but what he knows and understands, He is absolutely trying to help her. Absolutely trying to help her. Even though...
Oh, yeah. Even though he doesn't like her and he probably would rather she be gone and dead, he is actually... I'm glad you said that. I did not think about it that way. He's trying to hurt her, but I don't think he's intending to help her. He's trying to like shove a knife in and try and get his digs wherever he can. However, there is the overlayer that he may not see, or if it's there, it's like, oh, well, it may benefit, but that's not my main, yeah. You know, my main reason.
Absolutely.
My main reason is like, you're not special, right?
Right.
You're not special. But yeah, he's also like, you're like me.
The biggest part is the jilted lover. The largest part is the jilted lover. However, the smaller part is the actual, look, I'm trying to let you know that he did the same things with me on a less sexual level. Like, he did everything to me that he's doing to you on a friend level. So if you are committing to him on a less than friend level, you are setting yourself up for disappointment, because he's never given me any of the things that I need. He just allows me to be in his presence. And if that's the only thing you need is to be in his presence, you are going to be disappointed, probably, because he has larger scope, larger things going on, and you are always going to take a secondhand role to those things. So I feel like Kit was trying in his own way to assist her and to help her see the truth. But at the same time, it was also like, dude, calm down. You don't know what he was 400 years from now. You only know him 400 years ago in this time period.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it. I could see it in the way of, or in the vein of, look, I'm going to do you a solid. It's not about you. It's him. This is his MO. This is what he does. My being helpful is letting you know that this is his MO, but my dagger in the back or in the heart or in the side or whatever is, you're not special. So it's a move with a kind of let me lay it out and like kind of like friend to friend, or, you know, man to woman, whatever. But yeah,
it was a weird attempt at kindness while also a weird backhanded moment. So it was like, you, but also please pay attention to these things.
Be careful. Yeah.
Right.
So we have to also, not belittling his feelings, because what he experiences is what he experiences. But we also have to remember that he's a demon, and demons are drama.
Are a little bit crazy. They're also a little bit crazy.
And drama.
They don't have an accurate view of reality.
I would say that's right.
As much as they try, most of them live in a different, they just live in a different kind of moment outside of the rest of us.
The next scene, we get Matthew, after he'd been summoned and rowed a boat. He's in a jail cell. It might be the tower. I am led to believe it's the tower, right? It's in London. It's not too far. It's on the River Thames. So, but he's summoned somewhere. And when they show us, they show us him standing, and they do like the very, very, very last shot is getting up to closer to his face. But we see him standing in and among a jail cell, in a cell. And then they show the person who's across from him in a cell. Someone is chained.
For me, it was a strange choice for them to clue Kit in, because as I recall in the books, Kit didn't know. Kit was just this peripheral, unrequited love interest who was upset that his unrequited love interest had somebody else he was interested in. Because I promise you, as a person who has had an unrequited love in my lifetime, it's super frustrating when you have these feelings for somebody who doesn't have them for you. And that in and of itself is frustrating. But when that person is actively crushing and or loving on some other third party, it's really hard to be a part of, because you have to be, because you're their quote unquote friend, right? So you're trying to be supportive, and you're trying to do all the things to make them feel comfortable and powerful and all those things. But when you also love them, like Kit loves Matthew,
and we haven't gotten there yet, but when you also care about them as deeply as Kit loves Matt, cares about Matthew, it is more. And this whole scene was the more of the whole thing. Because he's not only like, Matthew is this, Matthew is that. But, you know, when they have this whole scene, when it's the three of them and he's like, and sorry, she's like, I'm a time walker. We're from a different Cambridge. She's still never heard of it. She's like, of course not, because it doesn't exist yet, biatch. So all those things happened. And I thought it was strange. I thought it was strange, given the book series, that they brought Kit into it. Clearly, it quieted him to be in on this secret. However, it was still strange because he is not trustworthy at all.
So Matthew's in a jail cell. Someone is chained across from him and he's standing by as they're torturing, or someone is torturing this person. And the look in Matthew's eyes as the camera goes from, you know, kind of comes slowly closer up to him. It's a mix of, and I could be reading this wrong, but what I read was a mix of fascination and mild horror. It was hard to read, but it definitely wasn't disgust. It was, or maybe there was disgust there, but it wasn't strong.
To me, it was not so much disgust. It was upset, because that is not why he is here. And this was not something he had to do in the past, because in the past he was busy in Scotland. So this is not anything he's, and if this had been something he had to do in the past, I'm sure he would have been like, cool, let's just finish this and be done with it, right? I already did this. It's not a big deal. This is for him as a person going to the past, trying to relive the history he's already done. This is not new. This is new. This is not the old, this is something I've already done. I know how to deal with this because I've already done it. This is absolutely new. And this is him making choices to exist in the new past that he is now living in, which, if anyone is the sympathetic character in this whole episode, it's Matthew, because he has no choice. He's been there before, which means he not only has been there before, but he now, but not here, right? So he's been there, but not here. But now he has to be here and do things that he as a character never had to do before.
He's been then, but not there.
Exactly. And he did his then in a whole other country. So he's not, I don't think he's emotionally prepared to be then in London.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Because he wasn't there before. He was physically prepared to do what he did in the past before. But because this is something absolutely new, and torturing witches and vampires and other people of his own ilk is not something he'd prepared to do. And it's not who he is now.
Correct. And so that is how they leave us, ladies and gentlemen. The outgoing song, the outro song, was a very minor rendition of Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen.
Right? Which is 100% from Spaceballs, when they had Daphne Zuniga's character singing it in a very robust bass. It's also a Negro spiritual, and it is a song that I think most people will understand. But it was, what I love about the BBC is that they find these meaningful songs that have such great covers, where the actual song is
BBC or Bad Wolf?
I'm going to say BBC because, I'll say Bad Wolf, but I just say BBC because, I'm sorry, you're right, it's absolutely Bad Wolf. But they have this capability of finding amazing covers that all kind of feel the same. And if you watch, you'll see in the weeks to come that they end most episodes with the same feel. It's all, mostly, I won't say all, but it is mostly covers of songs you recognize, but they are delivered in a way that feels like it is indicative of this series, which I'm all for. All for. I love a good cover, and I love a cover that makes me go, huh, I know that song. This is not what I expected. So this is something that I personally feel that most British shows do. I could be wrong, but maybe that's just my impression and it's not, you know, actuality. And I'm sure there's some, you know, BBC programming that doesn't have great covers to end their episodes with. But for the most part, they try to find, I feel like they try to find covers that make you feel a specific way that is potentially not the original feel of the song. So it's like, I don't know. I love it. I'm excited about it. I'm excited about all the new soundtrack ideas and the things that we can go from here. And it was a great pickup from last season, dropping us into this season. And kudos, man. Just kudos.
It was amazing. We are very excited to come back and talk about the rest of the season week by week. So it was a great, I was not sad we didn't get any more of the 21st century or modern time, except for the very beginning. But I think we needed to have we needed the world building. We needed not to jump back and forth. We needed a solid, at least one episode in the 16th century. And they did absolutely what we needed to do.
I mean, that's what you do when you world build, though. You can't adequately world build when you spend too much time in the place you've already fleshed out. So we've been fleshed out in the current state, and then they want us to, okay, we're time walking, so now we have this new place. But because we're now in a new place, we don't understand what's scary about it. We don't understand why we should be nervous. We don't understand any of the weirdness about that until they spell it out for us. So it was a great entree, I believe, to season 2, and I am crazy excited to see where they go from here because they have been exemplary. Join us next time when we discuss episode 202, where we continue our discussion of season 2 of A Discovery of Witches, where the magic is as amazing as the CGI we can afford.